Many people were shocked by finding out that their belongings were here, and it was shocking because, you know, they started to imagine of some atrocities or injustices that took place for this to happen in the first place, to have their belongings here in the first place. So it raised a lot of concern, like, you know, the owners must have been killed by the collectors, as there is no way that, you know, they could sell belongings.
Welcome to episode 4 of the podcast Decolonial Memories. I am Thomas Fuß. Today I have the honor and pleasure to talk to Dr. Liber Kalanga Moko. Dr. Liber is a scholar at Freie Universität Berlin. He works with a collaborative research area, Affective Societies, in the subproject Contested Property. I'm here with Dr. Liber Kalanga Moko. Thank you very much for taking the time to have this fourth episode of the podcast Decolonial Memories.
Thank you very much, dear Thomas, and I'm happy to be with you to discuss about the topic. You are welcome.
I would like to start congratulating you, because with your doctoral dissertation, you won the highly esteemed Ernst Reuter Prize of Freie University. The topic of your doctoral dissertation is Sensing the Colonial Order of Things, Maasai Materialities and Ethnographic Museums. Could you please tell us a little bit, what is this piece of work of your original research all about?
Yeah, thank you for the congratulations, and I'm really happy that my dissertation that you mentioned so correctly won prizes here in Berlin. And to tell you a little bit about Sensing the Colonial Order of Things, Maasai Materialities and Ethnographic Museums, it is a work about, that takes ethnographic museums in Berlin, particularly the Berlin's Ethnological Museum and the Humboldt Forum, as a starting point to look at the whole topic of colonialism and the collection from the then called German East Africa, today's Tanzania. And I have worked with communities there, particularly the Maasai community, in northern Tanzania, to look at some of their collection that is housed in the Berlin's Ethnological Museum, and part of it are also displayed in the Humboldt Forum. And so it is about, you know, first of all, understanding, bringing in the community perspectives into the ongoing transnational debate around questions of decolonization, you know, restitution and all that. And it is a very, I had a different approach, particularly starting from the community and trying to bring their perspectives into the bigger questions that are being addressed in the transnational discussions. So mostly in it, I address meanings, you know, that the pieces or the so-called objects here have to the communities.
Sorry, could you give us some examples of the cultural belongings from the Maasai that you found in the Ethnological Museum Berlin?
Yeah, so there are several from all aspects of culture. I mean, from spiritual belongings or pieces like those people use in family and community rituals. For example, I can mention a few like an ear, like ear pendants that are worn by women, which has a very important functions in facilitating reproductions, biological reproductions. Others are necklaces that are also very religious. There are also war booties like spears, like swords, arrows, etc. But there are also pieces that are used for beauty, like normal or everyday belongings that people adorn their bodies with, like you could say of beadworks, etc. So there is a lot, not less than 500 pieces, for example, at the Berlin's Ethnological Museum.
And all of these, do I understand this correctly, were translocated to Germany, to Berlin, during the time of German colonial rule in East Africa. Is that correct?
Yes, most of them were brought in during German colonial times, although there is also a few that were brought in the 1980s. We'll think of neoliberal times. So some of the collectors were also reaching out to the community, and they managed to buy some, not directly from the community, but in markets that my interlocutors even said like were more like illegal markets. Okay. Yeah, so it's a mix of those, but most of the collection, a huge part of it, was brought during German colonial time, the 1890s onwards.
And with those, we can safely assume that they were appropriated by the Germans directly or indirectly through the use of force and imperial colonial rule. Is that correct?
That's the perspective of the community, you know, because first of all, most of the collections or objects, and I use objects so cautiously, most of the so-called objects that I was working on were seen by my interlocutors as, you know, inalienable pieces, like things that you cannot give them away outside the normal family setting where they, you know, where they are inherited to respective people. And so they thought that, you know, there must be violence that was applied to acquire them from the original owners, and most likely that many people were killed at that time. And so yes, force, and that's exactly the case also when you dig deep into the colonial literatures, particularly reports by the collectors, you know. And I remember one example of a spear that, if I remember, a collector called Friedrich Kallenberg was actually a German colonial officer, and also I think he owned a plantation. I can't recall pretty much now about that, but, you know, he participated in one of the wars with the Maasai together with another person called Kurt Johannes. And he managed to, you know, to fire like the bullet fleeing Maasai, and the person died and he collected the spear. So you can really, and the spear is now in the Ethnological Museum of Berlin, and you can really see, also read a lot about violence that happened at this, at that time of collecting most of these cultural belongings.
You use the term inalienable. Yeah. I'm sorry, you're better at pronouncing it than me. And I understand this is also the theoretical framework. Could you please use some examples to demonstrate what does this look like for the communities, for the people?
Yeah, so first of all, what I can say is that, you know, most of the pieces that I looked at are not simply historical belongings. Rather, they are still in use even today in the community. And I think to better understand the inalienability, then we would rather first look at how people come to, you know, own them. So, you know, the Maasai have the so-called, it's a kind of a system where I think it's called edge set system, you know, and the pieces are owned in that way. So it's based on this age, but also, you know, gender.
Could you please use an example? So cultural belonging?
Yes. So for example, for the spear that I gave as an example already, it belongs to Maasai warriors. You know, this is one of the stages that a man, you know, passes through in his way to elderhood. And a spear is a piece that he receives at one of the ritual or ceremony that is called Eunoto. And there, you know, it is blessed, you know, ritually, and somehow that's what makes it part of you, because you have to use it to defend the community, to defend cattle, and, you know, so it's a belonging. And the same goes to an ear pendant, for example, that women wear for reproduction, for example. So at the time of marriage, you receive it from your parents. A woman receives it from her parents, and she has to have it, and there is a ritual involved in the process of receiving it. So the elders will bless it and really connect it to you, that when you have it, it is part of you, and you have to care it simply in the way you care your body, you know. So it becomes part of your body. Exactly.
Yeah,
and that is what I mean by the, or at least we mean by the concept of inalienability. That is, once it is part of your body, you know, it becomes you. It is it. You know, you cannot really take it away or give it away from your body, and you have to have it. So,
like you would never give it away.
You would never get it away. Yeah, exactly. Except that there is also a very elaborate system of transferring them to your kins, like your children or your relatives, very, very close relatives. So, and that will not be counted as giving it away. Rather, it is entitled also to the kins, and you could transfer it like that customarily. Yeah.
Could we now please go to the situation where you travel to the Maasai community? And I understand you took along pictures and showed it to the people there. What happened? What were the responses you received there?
Yeah, so, you know, but maybe to start a little bit before, you know, when I first came to Berlin in 2019, I remember it was September 2019, the idea was that I could have to work with some of the objects that were collected during famous in Tanzania, so-called Majimaji War, which was fought, it was an anti-colonial resistance war fought between the German colonial troops and some communities in Tanzania.
Yeah, southern Tanzania,
southern
right?
Tanzania,
from 1904 until 1908.
Or 07, yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And to be, yeah, frankly, I didn't know about the presence of Maasai collection in the museum here. So, but you know what happened in 2019, particularly in the end, we had COVID and, you know, which disrupted everything. So I couldn't really travel to do my research in southern part of Tanzania. But, you know, I visited the Ethnological Museum of Berlin for the first time in early 2020. I think it was in March 2020. And I was going through a list of the pieces that they have in their database, and I could encounter, you know, the photos of most of the belongings that I knew were from my community. And that's when I started to be shocked, like, this also here. I mean, I know this, I know that, you know, from my childhood. So by then, I started to share, you know, the photographs of these pieces with my close friends, particularly my family, but also my relatives, neighbors, and people were interested. So that's when I started to work on Maasai collection, actually, with the people, with my people from my community. And my approach has always been to, so I use what we call visual methods, particularly photo elicitation. And with photo elicitation, you have like a professional photograph of a piece, like a big one. So we photographed them. And then I had I brought these photographs to the community because I couldn't transport the real pieces. So I brought the photographs, and you know, I was showing them to the people, and the idea was that I had to observe their reactions in the first place, like how did they react about it. And for sure, people expressed, at least they reacted so much differently, with a lot of emotions, by the fact that, you know, the pieces are here, and it was unbelievable to them, to the extent that most of them declined that it's not true that the pieces are in Germany.
So
in
there
Berlin.
Were no collective or community memories, and something
not at all, not at
violent
all.
And disruptive.
No,
happened.
They had no idea about colonialism, because this is also not really in any forms in it's not in any form in Tanzania. I mean, colonialism in the Maasai is not a topic at all. It wasn't. And so they had no idea, and nobody had most of these memories. I mean, they could think of World War One, World War Two, a little bit of stories behind, but they never imagined or had at least this idea that the cultural belongings were taken to Germany. So there was a lot of reactions, and some couldn't believe, something that even led me to make like an ethnographic film, a video with me in the depot of the Ethnological Museum,
okay,
holding the concrete pieces so that they could, you know,
they would
they
be convinced, like, otherwise convinced. They wouldn't believe you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then,
okay,
I brought the video to the community again, and then people were seeing, and they started to believe, like, you know, yeah, this is true. And a lot of concerns have been raised by the community since then. And we have basically focused my research on their perspectives, and that's what I contribute in the sensing colonial order of things. Yeah.
Since you work for this collaborative research area, Effective Societies, could you go a little bit into detail? What were the emotions? How did people respond to this? Were they angry or disbelief? You said they were disbelieving, but what were the emotions that you encountered there?
Yes, first of all, many, many people were shocked by finding out that their belongings are here, and it was shocking because, you know, they started to imagine of some atrocities or injustices that took place for this to happen in the first place, to have their belongings here in the first place. So it raised a lot of concern. Like, you know, the owners must have been killed by the collectors, as there is no way that, you know, they could sell belongings. So, but also, you know, others were surprised that, you know, they have been here for so many years, and they were asking, like, you know, what are the museums in Germany or in Berlin doing with them? And of course, sad, many people were sad, and they could even connect the presence of most of the religious pieces here to a lot of, you know, problems that they are having in the community right now, because they think, you
know, like, what kind of problems would they associate with the absence of the cultural
exactly
norms?
So they first of all, they were concerned of the problems that might have been facing the families of original owners of the pieces, that, you know, if some of them, like, allowed this to happen in any way, they have been affected by the powerful forces that are residing in these, you know, spiritual pieces. I mean, mentally, through death and all that. And they also think that the community has been affected through disasters, for example, like drought, so they could connect it to shortage of rainfall or rains, you know, other droughts, like other crises, like drought, death of cattle, because, you know, some of the pieces are also related closely to the cattle and the Maasai are pastoralist, but also problems within the family with, for example, infertility, you know, death, diseases, strange diseases, you know, and all this connect to that, because, you know, the pieces, as I said in the beginning, that, you know, the pieces are connected to the families, particularly by the fact that they have been used in rituals. And so they are connected to the previous owners, but also to their families and generations. And they think that bad things have been happening to the generations, but also to the Maasai at all. And, you know, the whole cultural system has been disrupted by this dislocation of the pieces. Yeah.
So what, in terms of, you described the feeling of loss and pain, seeing that these things are now in Berlin. Were there calls or demands for restitution that people articulated once they realized that these things are far away?
Yeah, so our approach mostly have been kind of a research, like, you know, trying to find more about their perceptions, I mean, communities' perceptions, reactions. But of course, the topic of restitution or repatriation have also been at the center of our process. However, you know, when we remember in 2022, that was the first time when we brought the idea of possible restitution to the community, and they raised difficult questions, because I remember we asked, like, what would you like to happen with the pieces? Would you like to have them back? And we had this group meeting, and people said, you know, they were actually reluctant, like, no, you cannot simply bring the pieces back to us, because they have been spoiled by the colonial injustices done in the past. So, and this is to say, you know, they don't see the pieces, or I don't want to call them objects, because I think that's also something that they declined during my research. But they believe that the pieces are powerful forces, they are subjects, they are reacting to the colonial injustices, and that you cannot simply bring them back. They have been transformed ontologically into dangerous entities, and you would have to follow a process based on Maasai customary law to really cleanse them, but also address other issues to do with reconciling, reparation before you, you know, end up into restitution. But yes, that's something that they thought it can happen, but not just like, a simple process where you say, well, here are the pieces and here you go, we are done.
Yeah.
So they see them as dangerous and really think that you have to deal with them in a very sensitive way until you reach a point where you turn them back into good pieces, into with good terms with people. Only then you can they can discuss about restituting them or anyhow that they would like to do with it.
You mentioned the term reparations.
Yeah.
Are there specific concepts or expectations how the Germans should address and face up and provide reparations for all the violence and pain that they caused?
Yes, with the Maasai, they have a very specific way to deal with reparation. They don't define reparation as a payment, you know, but what they see with colonial injustice that had led to the acquisition of the pieces and bringing them to Germany is that a lot of death was involved in the process. And, you know, killing a person in a Maasai, according to Maasai perspective, you know, it leads to a kind of a problem that they call iloikop. You know, iloikop is like a force out there, you know, or not just a force, but also you can say also like even the pieces, like the belongings of a person that remain, like not even that remain, I don't know, I want to find a good way to explain this, you know, when you kill a person, that means the blood is split, you know, the bones, you have killed somebody, and there is always a force that he or she leaves behind, mm-hmm. that is kind of revenging for that act, you know, and it happens also in the community, like when people are, you know, fighting each other, one might die, and they have an elaborate way to deal with the pollution that results from that. So you would have to, first of all, pay like cows, depending on the gender of the person. So you have to give 49 bulls or mm-hmm. he cows, if the victim was a man, or 49 she cows if the victim was a woman, and they would count that. You know, they would say the 9 cows or bulls would stand for 9 openings in the body of a person. You know. And the rest, you know, they have how to, they have the distribution, the calculation. And that is somehow, it's also a very comprehensive ritual way of dealing with the problem to really get rid of this pollution, iloikop. And after that, that's what you would say, I don't know, if you call it reconciliation, I would probably call it, I don't know, reconciliation, reparation, I don't know, but it's not really payment. It's something that you have to do to cleanse something.
Yes, for the cleaning, yes.
Exactly. And and for them, that's how it would have to happen. And it's there is a good example from the Rivers Museum in the
Oxford. University.
They have done that with 5 families from both Tanzania and Kenya. And they had to buy like all these cows also to try to reconcile with the families of the victims. And that's actually the process. And after that, you know, that would also involve an apology, like sorry for the deeds and cleansing and after that, then we can really rebuild the social relations that have been destroyed by.
So it's a quite a demanding, elaborate process. If Germany
very much
would consider seriously to
enter
in this process
very
of
much.
Addressing the injustices of the past.
Yeah.
Turning to ancestral remains, I know from research by the Prussian Cultural Foundation that they have identified that they're holding ancestral remains from the Maasai. Is that something that came up in your conversations?
Yes, it came up in almost all of my conversations, and it was super interesting because of the relationships that I already mentioned between belongings and human bodies. So they are inalienable, and when I showed people photographs of belongings, in the first place, they asked me the question, where are the bodies as well?
Okay.
Because they thought that these people were killed, and so their bodies also might be in Germany. So it came up, although that was not my focus in my research, but it kept, you know, popping up throughout my conversations with people. And it's very true that there are so many human Maasai human remains here in Germany. And for example, in these publications from 2022, human remains from German East Africa, for example, I think I remember counting them, and I think there are more than 30 actually in that piece of publication itself. And
only in Berlin, you know,
exactly,
exactly.
And there are a lot, and people have asked about them, but for sure, it wasn't my topic, although, you know, I couldn't also avoid discussing them somehow together with belongings, as they are, they don't see them as separate. Yeah, but, you know, I haven't dealt deeper into human remains.
Dr. Leiber, you mentioned that you are also a Maasai. You're from the Maasai community. So I wonder to what extent this part of your collective history, speaking of the German colonial occupation and violence, has that been part of your family conversations?
Yes. From the time I brought the news to the people, particularly to my family, to my relatives, and also to my community, it has been part of a lot of conversations that we make, informally and formally. And we have been discussing, because many of the pieces also came directly from the place where my family lives. For example, there is one of these famous places, they call it Mtombo, Mtowambo. So an English translation will be a river of mosquitoes. And there are also, particularly most of the pieces that found their ways into the museum in the 1980s were coming from this place, you know, also in a Russia city, which is not so far from my...
sorry, 1980s or 1880s?
1980s.
Oh, so that's long, yeah, okay.
Yes, but recent. I mean, tracing also the roots of the caravans
yeah,
and the colonial troops, they were really traveling also along the coast to the interior,
yes, yes,
and particularly to Arusha and area and Kilimanjaro, and that's exactly where I am from, northern Tanzania, I would say. And so this has been really a topic for us also, particularly like I have asked, for example, my parents if they recall anything about the Maasai encounters with German colonial troops, you know, and their memories do not really go so far to before World War II. You know, they can recall that particularly, or World War I, for example, they can recall that, you know, they have been told stories of this was happening and that the Maasai were involved. You know, they make this joke that, you know, they were on the part of the Germans and they were helping to fight the British. And at some point, you know, I think there was a failure on one side, and they witnessed a lot of also warriors being killed by the armies and all that. And that I even recall a case where one person, they narrated that one person was killed and his skull was like a warrior. There were two of them and one ran away and one was killed and they took his skull. So we have been having like partly some conversations about possible atrocities, particularly to do with killings and all that, and you know, taking of human remains. But yeah, it's not really much out there, not so much that people can remember about it.
Now, looking beyond the Maasai community at what today is Tanzania, or mainland Tanzania, can you recall personally at what point you became aware of the totality of German colonial violence in what was called East Africa at that time?
Yes, this is really an important question because, you know, throughout my education system in Tanzania, I studied history classes to my what we call advanced secondary school level, that is before the university. And colonialism is the topic, particularly there we talk about the Berlin Conference 1884 and the partition of Africa. We were also taught about some anti-colonial resistance wars, and what is really in the national narratives are the wars, like with much more with centralized communities, like with the Hehe, with the Majimaji War that we mentioned. You know, you would hear something like Abushiri Wars, you know, so more in the coast and all that. But I never had anything to do with my community, the Maasai, particularly any encounters or clashes with the German colonial troops. And I didn't know about that until when I came to Berlin and actually started to be aware of the presence of them, some of the collections in the museum in 2020, as I said, the beginning. And that's exactly the moment that myself, I was really reflecting about, you know, this, the colonial history plus Maasai, you know, involvement, not involvement, but Maasai encounters with colonial forces. And, you know, it is only on that time, I remember so vividly that, you know, I kind of dug deep into colonial literatures to find out more about how my community been also, you know, a target of colonialism, but also how they have struggled to, you know, to resist it, you know. And I have read a lot of horrible stories out there that I think it is simply the case that there was nobody probably out there who sat down and write about this back then. But, you know, you really see, like, there was so much aggression, so much clashes that involved bloodshed, killings, death, you know, and all that destruction and a lot of, you know, a lot of problems in the community. So yeah, so that's just to make my answer. That's when exactly I came to, you know, be aware, but also on top of trying to find out more about colonialism and the Maasai community in northern Tanzania.
So that was pretty much happened when you had come to Berlin.
Exactly. At that point. Exactly.
Can you give a reason or explanation why you decided to come to Germany to study, to live now for quite a while? You could have gone to United Kingdom or to France or to the US. Does the colonial entanglement between Germany and what today is Tanzania, did it play somewhat a role in your decision to come here?
Yes, it played a role. First of all, before coming to Berlin to work as a doctoral researcher at Freie Universität Berlin, based at Affective Societies, I was working at the university in Tanzania, the University of Dodoma, which is in Dodoma, the capital city of Tanzania. And I was working for the Department of Sociology and Anthropology. And I had so much interest in material culture and also anthropological methods, particularly, you know, doing ethnography. And at the time when I was working there, I have always been looking for scholarships. That's what academics, particularly young academics, do when they are at universities in Africa, I can say, or in Southern Africa, or in Tanzania, basically. And so there was an opportunity that was circulated from the project in which I pursued my PhD, contested property, which was looking on questions of property and normative conflicts around the collection from Maji-Maji War. And so, and I received the link to this call for applications from a friend who was based at the University of Dar es Salaam. And then I applied and I went through the process, I mean, with the interview. And luckily, I was selected to come here and join the project team. And so that is exactly how, you know, I kind of jumped into the question of colonialism and material culture or material pieces that were brought during that were brought to Germany during colonial times.
Dr. Lauerbauer, now I would like to turn to your present research. You are a member of the team that the collaborative research area on effective societies, and your present work is entitled Contested Property, Effective Dissonance and Relational Ethics in Museum Cooperation. Could you please give us some idea of what this is all about?
Yeah, so this is the project in which I work in right now, and it's kind of following up from our previous project. And here we are interested into research and collaborations. So collaborations, as they are happening in the context of museums, here are kind of our research topic. And I am interested in different formats of collaborations. And by formats, I'm interested in formats where museums in Germany, in Berlin specifically, let's say the Ethnological Museum and the Humboldt Forum, are collaborating with other museums institutions in Tanzania, like the National Museum in Dar es Salaam, or community museums in different parts of the country.
Is this already happening? I mean, I know of the collaboration with the National Museum of Tanzania, but is Ethnological Museum Berlin already entering?
Yes, exactly. Oh, maybe you could. It has been doing this.
Please give us
an example with Majimaji Memorial Museum in Songea, for example. Yeah. But there are also collaborations, for example, with other small museums like in Iringa, you know. So I'm following on this, and also other formats like collaborations between museums here and communities directly, but also collaborations that are between museums and museum activists communities. So activists acting as like a bridge, trying to, you know, bring the communities and the museum together. So these different formats. And my interest in collaborations is on, as in the title of our project, affective dissonance. Like those moments where there are kind of, not conflicts, some sort of arguments or disagreements, you know.
Can you please provide an example?
Yeah. So, for example, let's say we'll go to a workshop, you know, where there are different actors, you know, discussing about restitution, for example.
Pick the town or where you go.
For example, with restitution, for example. So I have recently been in Iringa.
Yes,
and was following a case of repatriation, for example, of a tooth. The Hehe chief, the
Mkwawa, yes.
Chief Mkwawa.
The von Prince family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my interest has been like, what do people from the community, for example, think or feel about this restitution of the tooth, for example, right? So, and what I find there is super interesting. For example, you know, there was a very simple process that happened when restituting the tooth, for example. So many people in the community said, you know, there was no rituals involved in that, particularly to kind of calm down the, you know, the forces at work, given
the evil forces,
exactly, sort of spirit.
Yeah.
And they think, you know, now having it there is causing a lot of problems, you know, within the family, etc. That's an affective dissonance, for example, you know, that's a dissonance, exactly.
Within the community.
We need to give it back, but communities are a bit, you know, hesitant that, you know, it should not happen this way, and, you know, what's happening about situations like that. So, and that's why I also have, we have this part of relational, new relational ethics, because we take that from San Savo, you know, this report to the President Macron, that, you know, what kind of relations institutions or people building with, you know, other people in the whole course of restitution or repatriation cases. So the new relationships, all kind of new relationships. So that's what I'm so much interested in. So it's more on following affective dissonances, so this kind of disagreements or discomforts that
do you
happen.
Have further examples of that you're looking at now? Is it a sort of a comparative approach
it's a
in different communities of Tanzania? Please
give some more examples. I'm interested in it's a kind of a comparative, and I'm looking at it from different communities. So, for example, with the Maasai, in the case of the Pitt Rivers Museum that I mentioned, I was also recently there, particularly met the, you would call them the chief or the elders council in Kilimanjaro, in Siha district. And we were speaking about the whole issue of restitution also. And they have been following what was going on with the project that was in Pitt Rivers Museum, you know, and they were dealing with five pieces from the Maasai community, Maasai communities, because they were both from Kenya and Tanzania. And there was a visit by a group of activists who went to the museum, and they said, you know, it's now fine, because they have settled everything with reconciling, with paying kettles. So they said it's now okay that the pieces can, you know, be left in the museum and they can be used by the museum, let's say in exhibitions and all that. And, you know, the Elders Council, which is like a community leadership, you know, that's really leading, representing the whole Maasai community in Tanzania, but also in Kenya. And they were not happy about that. They said, you know, you cannot really, I mean, the pieces, like the objects, you know, quote unquote, have not been cleansed, you know. So the process was short of, you know, short of a lot of things. And the process wasn't over, you know. So you see this kind of disagreement between the leaders and the group and the museum in it also trying to, you know, justify it is whatsoever use of pieces in its own context. So there are so many examples around.
This is really fascinating, because I think we can expect a lot of these dynamics contested within the communities in Tanzania now, as I guess Germany is getting ready to return a number of cultural belongings. Have you been in touch with any of the communities whose cultural belongings are presented in the new exhibition at the Humboldt Forum?
Yes, I have been in touch with, for example, several communities, the Chaga, the Wameru, you know, the Maasai also, you know, have some pieces from the Maasai, the Hehe also, and have also been keenly following on ongoing collaborations between the Ethnological Museum and some communities in southern part, like the Ngoni people, but also the Swahili, particularly with the National Museum of Dar es Salaam. And so, yes, I have been closely following on that. And what I can say is that there is so much resonance or like resemblance in the ways people, all these communities perceive the pieces, you know, particularly as active forces, as very sacred, as religious, and as also problematic, you know, particularly in situation that they have been put by colonialism, and, you know, the fact of taking them. So there is a lot of similarities in most of these communities that I have been following
Can you bring in, please, the how does the government of Tanzania and the National Museum of Tanzania, what role do they presently play and how do the communities look at them? Because let's assume that through this exhibition and other acts of restitution, a number of cultural belongings will be returned to Tanzania. My understanding is that the government of Tanzania insists that they should be the receiving side through National Museum of Tanzania. But what are the dynamics between the communities and the national authorities within Tanzania?
Yeah, this is something I'm interested in. And I think at least from some of these communities that I have mentioned, there is, I think it is in their, it is in their knowledge that they need to, they need involvement with the Tanzanian government to deal with the whole, this whole critical question of colonialism, restitution, you know, and all that. And, you know, yes, so I'm so much interested in that. And you can also see that, you know, the Tanzanian government is interested in doing something. Of course, there is still this idea of wanting to centralize everything because, you know, Tanzania is a country that's not really pro ethnicities, ethnicity or tribalism. So they are a bit, the country or the government is a bit afraid of the possibility that, you know, if communities deal with the whole question separately, it might lead to tribalism. But at the same time, I mean, this is at least the ideas that I get from the communities that they have representations, and it's also good that maybe to say that Tanzania has also allowed, or it recognized the multiculturalism in the country, and there are representations, as I said, like, for example, with the Maasai Elders Council, but also the Chagas have their representation. There is even this chief council. And most people that I spoke to were envisaging the process where, you know, these traditional institutions, you know, work collaboratively with the government to facilitate discussions, but also restitution processes. But in the end, the interest of the community is that, you know, they can, in the end, have an authority to do whatever they want with the pieces. If it is human remains, they would love to not just rehumanize them, but, you know, to, if it's to bury them in a culturally appropriate ways, I think that what they would love to see in the end. If it is with belongings, they would love also to make sure that the processes have been settled down very well, ritually, but also totally, I mean, fully involved until the end, like the final decision to say what should happen with the pieces finally. So, yeah, but I cannot really, it is just starting also in Tanzania, you know. I remember that President Steinmeier visited Kachakoil, also visited there, particularly she was in Moshi. And we also, we have also seen the National Committee on Restitution Repatriation a week ago, that they visited Berlin, Germany, following on the same issue. So I think it is just starting, and it's not yet a point where we can say, you know, the relationship between the Tanzanian government and communities is not good at all, or, you know, I think it is starting, and I think it is a good start, and I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of possible ways to, you know, have the community on board and fully involve it, or involve them, the communities, in the whole process, and to have the really good end results in the whole course.
So, Dr. Leiber, coming to the final section of our conversation, I would like to hear about your impressions of Germany with regard to addressing colonial legacies. You've been here since 2019, if I understood that correctly. Where do we stand? What is your view of the process in Germany, the sincerity, the extent, and the depth of German efforts to address colonial legacies in general?
Yeah, difficult question, I must say, and but it's a very good one. Yeah, I have been an observant here in Germany, like observing how the public is reacting, and I think it is quite evident. It has been quite evident. I have seen a lot from demonstrations to, from different publics. I have seen also, have attended a lot of events also discussing about colonial injustices, and that something must be done. So I think the discussion in Germany is quite vibrant. But that's the discussion, you know. In terms of actions, implementations, I think it's something else. Maybe that is still very, very slow, although there are cases when I think of other countries, like the restitution of Benin bronzes. So it's happening. Something is happening in Germany, although I still feel like many people are not aware of the bigger topic of colonialism and colonial injustices. I mean, but the smaller segment that is fully aware about it, I think they are really trying to push. They are pushing. They are trying to do something. They are trying to push the government also to do something. And I already mentioned, for example, the visit by President Steinmeier, and he even went to Songea, for example, where Maji Maji War took place, and apologized for the atrocities that took place there. But I was also in Moshi when Kaja Coil visited, and she also apologized on behalf of our German government. So I think something is happening. You know, we should not underestimate that. Although me as also a victim of colonialism, I have a big expectation that, you know, things are really happening in a quick manner, in a very practical level. But again, you know, I can't complain, because, you know, it is a process. Although I think there is still not so much commitment from the German government to invest quite much in terms of resources also to do something, you know. I mean, they are trying to address this, but I think it has to be taken into another level, because we are speaking of really horrors. We are speaking of, you know, terrible past, dark history that has really to be dealt with in a very honest way. And I think that needs investment in terms of resources, but also time to really let this, you know, take place as a debate, but also as avenues for recommendations on what should be done, and really also see things happening in practical levels. But I think we are not yet there. That's my impression. But I'm also very hopeful because what we are doing is not nonsense. I think it is contributing. You know, we can also see museum institutions doing a lot of really progressive things, really things that raise hope, a lot of hope. For example, with allowing critical discussions, critical exchanges, you know, collaborations like what we are doing and what I'm following on right now in my project. So I think there is so much happening at different levels, and all of these are kind of leading the way or leading us to somewhere where I believe we will reach a point where, you know, things will be happening in a more practical way.
What do you expect of German civil society organizations, the activists? What could they do more or better than what you've seen them doing so far?
I think civil societies in Germany, I think they have been doing a very good job. I mean, I know that some of them are involved in provenance, for example, of human remains, but also they are involved with communities of origin, and they are also been very potential in bringing the topic up into different publics in Germany, and I think they are doing a really, really nice job. And I cannot really I don't have any, let's say, negative view about the civil society. I think they are doing something great. It's just to give them hope that, you know, they have to keep the work going, you know, they have to keep doing it, you know, and also advocating for the majority of people who are out there really suffering from colonial injustices. And so they should not get tired. They should really keep on doing something until we realize, or until things materialize, in a sense. Thank you.
What's your view of the Tanzanian diaspora? What could be their contribution to new relational ethics between Germany and Tanzania?
I think they can be a bridge. Really bridging their communities, their government with, you know, German government, but also with German institutions, and including cultural institutions. I think the Tanzanian diasporas are at a very better location, position, space, where they can really, you know, play this role, and in that sense, they can provide like information to their communities. I think that's what happened with me, for example. I brought the information about the presence of Maasai collections in museums in Germany. Many museums have them, and people now are aware of that, and they are trying to really do something about it. And I'm trying to be a bridge also to connect them to institutions here in Germany. And I think that's how I see the role of Tanzanian diasporas in Germany, just at the position like mine, where they can really do the job of connecting, of establishing relationships, but also, you know, being part of the struggle to find solutions.
So thank you very much, Dr. Leibor, for this fascinating conversation. Wishing you all the best for your future research. We're very much looking for the results of your work here with the Effective Societies Contested Property research area. And please keep at it and inform us here in Germany what we can do better to work on a new relationship for Tanzania and Germany.
I will do that, and it's my pleasure, and thank you for having me, and I'm really, really happy to discuss this. Thank you.